Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Senators, how say you? Is the respondent Donald John Trump guilty or not guilty? A roll call vote is required, and the clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Baldwin, guilty. Mr. Wyden, guilty. Mr. Young, not guilty.
The yeas are 57, the nays are 43. Two-thirds of the senators present not having voted guilty. The Senate judges that the respondent, Donald John Trump, former president of the United States, is not guilty as charged in the article of impeachment.
There you go. It's all over. That's it. 437-1620, 437-1620, the impeachment for the second time. President Trump is done. It was decided on Saturday. In fact, it happened quickly, right? You had the first day of arguments on Wednesday, in which it just was, should we have this thing at all? Then you had Wednesday and Thursday, you had arguments by the prosecutors. They used almost all of their time. Not needed. I'll tell you, they could have done us all a favor and done it in a lot less time, because if you give them 16 hours, they'll use it. Could have been done in 3 or 4 hours, and then they wouldn't have had to repeat themselves 4 to 5 times per person. Seriously, that was what it was. It was over and over and over the same stuff, kind of like the first time, which has become apparently an annual exercise, impeaching President Trump. Only 2 times, but hey, whatever. So then they finished their argument, and then the defense got up, and despite a disastrous opening set of arguments on Wednesday, I was off last week, so I was watching all of this at home. No vacation, by the way, because of the impeachment. Just watching all this nonsense. Anyway, let's see. I got to think about it. So it was Wednesday, Tuesday, the Trump lawyers were terrible. I mean, just embarrassingly bad. In fact, I think Bruce Castor wound up leaving the team before the thing was all over because he was so bad that day. But in any case, they did their arguments on Friday for about 3 hours, 4 hours, something like that. And then they took some questions, and, you almost thought like they'd be done with it that night. That did not happen. And then on Saturday, they did closing arguments, and then... It's often the case. Apparently not always, but it doesn't, the defense or the prosecutors decided to introduce new evidence in the close, which is illegal. But they did anyway. And then they did some more talking, and then finally that they did a vote. And that was it. It was all done. Which, so it's all past us. And then McConnell gave a big speech. We'll get to that later in the show. The most interesting thing that happened the whole time, frankly, was McConnell's speech. More interesting than the arguments for convicting President Trump. More arguments than the defense of him, I think, just because of it was such a, I mean, it was a really fascinating speech. But like I said, we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. In the end, you had seven Republicans who voted to convict Richard Burr of North Carolina, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Mitt Romney of Utah. No surprises there. Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania and Ben Sasse of Nebraska. That was the most surprising to me. But he said in a lengthy letter, look, short version, I'm not quoting, is, you know, I promised you I would do what I thought my conscience told me was right, even if it went against what a lot of people believed, and that's what I did. He said, well, here, I'll read you a little bit of it. On election night 2014, I promised Nebraskans, he just won re-election, so he's safe for 6 years. I promised Nebraskans I'd always vote my conscience, even if it was against the partisan stream. In my first speech here in the Senate in November of 2015, I promised to speak out when a president, even of my own party, exceeds his or her powers. I can't go back on my word, and Congress cannot lower our standards on such a grave matter simply because it's politically convenient. I must vote to convict. So, I watched not every moment, but if it was 25, I got to do the math on how long it was altogether. In 25 hours or so, I probably watched like 24 hours. So I got almost all of it again on vacation. Why? Because, you know, who takes vacation anyway? It was a lot of repetition, but there was a lot to discuss in terms of what they alleged and what they failed to prove and what the defense did successfully or failed to do. And, you know, it's a little bit of a, how do you recap so much, even in a radio show where we're, you know, just kind of trying to bring you up to speed if you didn't catch all of it. But I think the basic issue here, if I'm giving an overview kind of look at the second impeachment, the thing that nobody disputes is that the attack on the Capitol was horrible. Was a crime, was, I mean, probably treasonous, at least seditious. And everybody who engaged in that criminal activity needs to be punished to whatever the law allows. No problem there. And, as I said several times on this show, if President Trump had material participation in the riot, then he also deserves criminal punishment and to be impeached. And you can't remove a president that's not a president anymore, but to be disqualified. I have no problem with that. I mean, you have to always give a standard. Like if you say, well, I don't think that the president is to blame. Well, what would make you say he's to blame? Much like the other side ought to be able to say, you know, what would allow him to be acquitted. I mean, if you're going to engage in the process of reason and evidence and analysis, you got to have your standards. You got to be able to offer them. Otherwise, you're just playing at the game of reason rather than actually using it as a tool to produce consensus or to evaluate the world. So, yeah, I've said that before. The question is, did he do enough to facilitate not the protest, but the riot, right? Protest is peaceful. Riot is violent. Did he do enough to facilitate the riot to deserve either a criminal punishment or a constitutional punishment? And I said before, no. And I say after the fact, no. Having, again, watched all of the evidence and listened to all of the arguments. Now, the House, or the presidential defense team made a big deal out of this question of whether it's constitutional. And I'm less sure of that than I was when I listened to the opening arguments. Frankly, the prosecutors were so good in the opening, the very opening day about constitutionality, and the defense was so bad that I was persuaded. Weirdly, it was Mitch McConnell after the fact that got me rethinking whether I think that this whole proceeding was appropriate. The basic question was one of jurisdiction, whether the Senate and the House even have, really the Senate, has any authority to convict and remove somebody who's no longer in office, because the relevant portion of the Constitution says president, vice president, and other officials. Well, he's not an official. He's not a president anymore. He's a former president. He's not a vice president. He's not at all. And he's not an official anymore. He's a former official. And the argument McConnell made in his close, and I think he actually is right about this. Again, I originally thought that this was a constitutional proceeding, and after the fact, when it was over, I'm actually sort of leaning the other way. Is that if you say somebody else, a former official, which is not specifically provided for in the Constitution, if you say a former official can be convicted, you know, and removed, and disqualified, then anybody could be. I mean, I could be. You know, you're not removing me, but you're not removing him either. But you could disqualify me, right? You could disqualify me from holding federal office. Theoretically, there's no prohibition. And that was his argument in part in his close was, if you allow a former official to be tried and removed, which you can't do, and disqualified, which hinges on removal, then anybody could be. And clearly that's not what the Constitution provides. So I lean that way. But I understand the argument that the prosecutors were offering, and I'm very sympathetic to it, frankly. The idea that just because it's the final days of a presidency, the January exception, as they called it, should it not be possible to do anything against them politically, either because they're leaving office through normal means or because they resign? You know, can you resign to stop an impeachment, basically? And this was a question, you know, could you have followed through on the trial of Richard Nixon? You know, could you have in order to disbar him? Well, he had served a second term, so it wouldn't have made any sense. But you could have, you know, you could have prevented him from being a Supreme Court justice. You could have prevented him from being Secretary of the Treasury. You know, these are all offices under the federal government. So philosophically, I think where I land on this is that philosophically, I think it is justified. It makes sense to be able to disqualify somebody. But constitutionally, based on the text of the Constitution, I think you can't. And philosophically, it doesn't really matter up against the text. So I actually am persuaded to change my mind on this. It's moot at this point. But it's still an interesting question for future cases. Now, none of that has anything to do with the question of whether he fostered the insurrection or incited it, as they said 1,000 times in their prosecution. But here, to me, the evidence just was always thin, and they didn't really add to it. If you look at all of his tweets, all of his speeches, everything that he did, which was all speech, right? Everything he did was all speech. And you look at everything he did and said over many, many months leading up to this, including the months since the election. You can't put all that together and demonstrate enough to satisfy either the Brandenburg test, which says that the speech itself has to call for violence, the author has to intend the violence, and the violence has to be imminent and result from the speech or the act. And none of those can be proved. Certainly, the words don't lead directly to violence. How do I know? Because thousands of people, for example, were at the Capitol during the protest and didn't become violent. And if it was so obvious that he was fostering violence all this time, why is it that nobody realized it until after it happened? We were all watching in horror on the 6th, including all the people who read the president's tweets all the time and listen to all of his speeches all the time. And everybody, not everybody, most people were shocked by the events. You can't be shocked by events that obviously come from the speech of the president, unless it doesn't obviously come from the speech of the president. And so that's where I land on it is I say, I mean, what he said, he shouldn't have said, the way he behaved, he shouldn't have behaved. Did he have an influence over the people? Sure. But did he satisfy the Brandenburg test? No. Did he do enough to be convicted for sedition or insurrection or inciting insurrection? Again, I think no. Am I pleased with the way he behaved since the election? No. Who could be? Well, and some Trump supporters apparently are. There's a lot more to be said. We'll talk about it throughout the show. 437-1620, 437-1620. As I say, in any case, now it's all done. He's promising some kind of a return to politics. It's unclear what that would be. Certainly, he is now still eligible to run for elected office if that's the shape that his return to politics takes. By the way, thank you to Davis and to Bobby and to Mike for filling in for me last week while I was gone.
It was fun, but I always say this when you're back. I'm happy, very happy, actually, that you're back.
You don't have to spend the whole day talking about impeachment.
Oh,
happy days. 521 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. I love love this song. This comes off of the first Cars album, and it's just so just good, smooth stuff. It's a song I had never heard before. I'm in this project now of I'm actually taking all of the bands I ever loved, and I'm trying to go back and listen to their you know, their first, second, third, whatever albums I haven't heard. There's so much. It's wonderful. I'm finding so much great music that I never knew existed because it didn't make the radio much or just because I didn't know it. And plus, I find new albums, which is always fun. 520. But it is weird finding, like, even a band that you listen to a ton when you're growing up, for me growing up, then you go back and find it. It's not the same because that's not one you've heard 50 times. So it's not familiar, even if it is really, really good. But that's kind of a fun part. 524, I feel like all my bands released new albums in the last year. It's great. 524 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
He's guilty, but Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says there's no question former President Trump is morally responsible for the Capitol insurrection.
According to public reports, he watched television happily, as the chaos unfolded. He kept pressing his scheme.
Still, McConnell and 42 other Republicans voted to acquit the former president, McConnell suggesting Trump can still be held accountable in a court of law. The Department of Health and Human Services reopening insurance enrollment on healthcare.gov to help people who lost jobs and health coverage because of the pandemic. Nearly 9 million people could get free or subsidized coverage during the special enrollment period that runs through May 15th. A Florida woman whose father created the first Lombardi Trophy says Tom Brady owes her an apology. Lorraine Gross, the daughter of master silversmith Greg Gross, says Brady disgraced and disrespected the trophy when he tossed it across the river to teammate Rob Gronkowski during last week's boat parade.
Look, there's a very simple way to settle this discussion. Should you or should you not throw the Lombardi Trophy? And the answer is, does it have a football on it?
So yeah.
Obviously.
You know what I think the argument is? I talked about this on my Saturday sports show, Sports Call. By the way, on ESPN Pensacola. I've been told I need to plug it more.
I love the back sell. Like, you know, the thing you should have listened to 2 days ago. Good job. All right, go ahead. And also again in 5 days.
By the way, on Saturdays. My argument is that he's a Florida man now.
Yeah, no,
simple
definitely.
Enough. Yep. He crossed the border and...
That's a perfect
staggered
Florida man
boat,
initiation. Yeah, he staggered
the
off
trophy,
the party.
Staggered out
he
of
was
the party.
On a boat.
Yeah.
He's, I mean,
welcome,
but for
man.
There being actual criminal activity or drugs, he's 100% Florida man. Yeah, yep. Well done. I mean, he needs a mullet.
Oh, he can get there.
Yeah.
He'll get there.
Take.
We'll work on
Giselle,
that.
You think Giselle would let him grow a mullet?
I think she'll let him do whatever he
no
wants at this point.
No chance. Zero chance. I'm sorry, no way. I can't. He's Tom Brady. He does what he wants. You need to be married longer. Mark, by the way, thank you so much for the update. 526 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. You know, if a gas truck blows up, holy smokes, man. I had a lot of people getting a hold of me yesterday, like, Andrew, did you know what happened yesterday? And I'm like, I'm still not at work yet, bro. But no, we were actually out doing our bike ride yesterday. And, oh, we finished the county, side note. We've biked the whole county now.
Whoa, that's it. How long did it take you? What, 6 years?
No, I mean, I don't know. 4 or 5 years? I'm trying to think back when we really started doing it this way, because in the beginning, we always took a bike ride with the kids, and then when the kids got old enough, we left them behind and made it date day. But yeah, I mean, 4 or 5 years. I don't know. Something like that. I have to ask my... She would know. But we've now biked in the entirety of Escambia County and Gulf Breeze, and... What? Marcus? What are you... What?
You haven't come by my house.
I have.
Right down my street?
Well, I don't know. Where do you live?
On Flintstone Lane. You haven't biked the entire county.
I really have.
Okay.
There I will say there are a couple of very, very small areas that we haven't done for safety's sake.
Yeah, that would be my neighborhood.
But it's not your neighborhood, trust me. Because we've also done some that we probably shouldn't have done for safety's sake, but we did anyway. So yeah, we biked out. Where was that? The explosion. Yeah, I was out bike riding up in Century yesterday, finishing up our tour of the whole county. Well, anyway, now that we got all that out of the way, back to you, Mark, for what's going up, sir?
We'll talk more about that explosion that rattled parts of the county on Sunday. It's coming up after Fox News.
You know more because you listen on the weekends. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Never about one speech.
So it's a little more nuanced, the prosecution's approach, the House manager's approach to the charges against President Trump, former President Trump. It's a little more than just he spoke at the Oval and they got enraged. You know, their claim is that over months he cultivated them, he groomed them, he brainwashed them, he programmed them, he did all of this stuff. And to me, again, it's fascinating to look at the allegations of President Trump's ability to control and manipulate people. And then to turn around and look at all of the people who failed to engage in violence. We don't know the number because estimating the crowd size is notoriously difficult. Anywhere from 10 to 100,000 people. When you're in a crowd, it looks like a million. And it's very hard to get good data on crowd size in D.C., especially these days now that drones are, you know, illegal to fly over the city. So, but let's say 20,000 people were at the protest rally at the Oval, which, by the way, the violence started before the speech was even ended, or even some of it even before it began. You can't say the speech caused it. I think the defense was right about that. That stuff was going on even before the speech happened. But again, this is Eric Swalwell, and the point he's making is that there was this long pattern of behavior leading up to that speech and then leading up to the Capitol riot. But again, if you got 20,000 people and 800 of them actually go into the Capitol, that's what? That's a, what, 4%, right-ish? So 4% as a success rate is not particularly good. And I don't mean to belittle what happened at the Capitol. That was horrible. But if you're going to say the president did it, you got to be able to say, you know, because he's this grand master of cultivating, you know, psychological effect. Well, at some point, they're people, right? And so the people who, I know the left doesn't like to think that Trump voters or Trump supporters think for themselves, but I mean, I personally know people who went to the rally and didn't do any violence. Why? Well, because they're rabid Trump supporters, but they're not rabid. They're just enthusiastic. And they certainly didn't engage in any violence or any illegal activity. So this notion that on the one hand, he is this psychological mastermind who is able to, like a cult leader is kind of, they never said it, but that's kind of that, like manipulate people into doing what he wants. And then in the end, such a small proportion of people actually did it before the speech, and so many people didn't do it. It's just, it's a hard case to make. 437-1620, 437-1620.
I want to be clear. During this trial, when we talk about the violent mob during the attack, we do not mean every American who showed up at President Trump's rally.
Good.
Certain Americans came to protest peacefully, as is their right. That is what makes our country so great, to debate freely, openly, and peacefully our differences.
Good. And he's right about that. And the vast majority were. And that's kind of the point. Remember, we played the clips for you of the speech itself, which are key. So when you press back on this issue of what did that speech itself do, their answer is they kind of ignore the context. They cherry pick certain clips. I thought the defense did a good job of pointing this out, that if you look at the fight clips in their proper context, or if you look at the, you know, the ones that they particularly emphasized, the case that he was telling them to go do violence falls apart, which is why most of them didn't go do violence, because they knew that's not what he was saying. And this is ultimately the question. I'll probably talk about this most times I mention it throughout the course of the day today. There are really two scenarios that you have to decide which one you believe in. And, I mean, this is the question if you're trying to figure out whether to convict President Trump or not. You have to decide between which of two scenarios you're going to side with. And the two scenarios are the one that the Democrats or the, you know, the prosecution is offering and one that the defense is offering. Although, weirdly, I think the defense never quite offered this, but it's the way I did my best to try to make sense of what was happening during the impeachment trial. So, everybody agrees there was a horrible thing that took place at the Capitol. The question is, should President Trump be punished for that atrocity? And again, the House manager spent most of their time focused, like 14 hours of their time focused on the event itself and how bad it was. Nobody disputes that. So why, you know, it's like you go into a murder trial and you just keep showing pictures of the victim over and over and over and over and over. Well, yeah, we know that part, but you got to connect that to the defendant. And the part where they connect it to the defendant, former President Trump, that was the weak link. That was the problem. And the more you emphasize the event and the less you connect it to the defendant, the more it looks like you're just engaging in a kind of a lynching. Like you're just trying to look for a target. And, of course, this is a familiar target because, as the defense pointed out, they've tried to impeach him every year since he was elected and two times actually brought impeachment charges successfully. So it was kind of a, we hate Trump, we're going to impeach him for something. That is, give us a reason. But back to the case. The two stories that you have to decide between, and you also have to make a decision when the evidence is unclear, which one do you presume? Because that's also a question in this case. Story A. President Trump engaged in a prolonged scheme to call up an army of supporters to the Capitol in order to violently interfere with the certification of the election with the goal of keeping the presidency through violence somehow. The riot at the Capitol was foreseeable, intended, and orchestrated by him. Therefore, it was an insurrection, a high crime, and you should convict, can't remove because he's out of office, but disqualify. That's the prosecution story, right? If you already believe Trump is evil, you'll find reasons to believe that story. You know, there's this old notion that President Trump is largely a Rorschach test. You know, you find in his behavior what you want to find. If you hate him, you'll find reasons to hate him. If you love him or admire him, you'll find reasons to do that most of the time. Okay? But anyway, story B, the second alternative. And again, I was frustrated that the defense never did actually say this, but this is the alternate. If you're going to offer a plausible alternative, this is what you say. President Trump engaged in a prolonged scheme to call up an army of supporters to the Capitol. That part, everybody agrees with that. He clearly was bringing people to the Capitol on January 6th. President Trump engaged in a prolonged scheme to call up an army of supporters to the Capitol. Here's where things start to differ. In order to peacefully protest the certification of the election, with the goal in mind of keeping the presidency by persuading Congress to disqualify enough states with questionable electoral practices to give them an Electoral College majority. The riot at the Capitol was an unintended byproduct of an otherwise peaceful protest caused by a small subset of protesters misunderstanding his desires or exceeding them by engaging in violence. Therefore, it was neither an insurrection, at least not by him, nor a high crime. I think those are your two plausible alternatives. And then you look at all of his behaviors and you ask which one fits better the fact pattern. And in my mind, I come down on B. But I will tell you, and I just in the interest of being fair, I'm 80% B or 70% B. And I'm still 20 to 30% A because I think there are unanswered questions. You know, if he was really only interested in peace, why didn't he do more after it was ongoing? Now, he did something. The prosecution lied. They said he did nothing. He did put out two tweets calling for when the protest was going on and you could see that it was happening. He put out two different tweets calling for peace and respecting law enforcement. He could have done more, but he didn't do nothing. The video was kind of, you know, the first video was pretty mealy mouthed and lackluster. He eventually much more robustly condemned it. I don't know whether I believe these. I mean, I guess I don't really believe these reports that he was sitting there watching it on TV pleased. Because if I believe that, that doesn't necessarily change what he intended ahead of time, but it's certainly the wrong reaction by the commander-in-chief after the fact or as it's ongoing. So I'm skeptical about those claims. But that's probably the one thing that gives me the 20 to 30% of story A is he could have done more and didn't to stop it once it was happening. But he did not. He didn't do nothing. He just could have done more. And also this report that he was happy watching what was happening on TV. It's hard to imagine anybody being happy about it. But even there, you kind of think maybe he was happy not because nobody at the time understood what was happening necessarily. You know, we didn't know people were dying. We didn't know police officers were being crushed, essentially, you know, or assaulted so violently. Maybe we did. I mean, it was all so weird and unexpected. And it's very easy to look back knowing what we know now and say how horrible at the time, which a lot of people did react that way, and he should have, again. But to me, if you look at the speech itself, he so clearly was wanting them to go and protest and encourage by their presence. I mean, this was, honestly, petition the government peacefully for redress of grievances. That's what the protest was. It was to stand in front of the Capitol in the thousands and say, we're here, do your job, and we think your job is to disqualify Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Pennsylvania. Do that, put this guy back in the White House, and we'll be satisfied. And any group of people is always allowed to show up and by numbers try to influence the outcome of a political process. That is the First Amendment. When it becomes violent, that is illegal. When it's just showing up and talking, even with bullhorns, even with, yeah, I mean, here you get into dubious territory, but, you know, having a gallows for Mike Pence, I hate that. But that's relatively typical political speech. It's not good, it's not Christian, but it's not illegal. It just looks more like an illegal thing after the fact when you have people apparently wanting to actually harm the vice president inside the Capitol, right? You see, there's a difference of the speech itself or the speech act and what it's connected with. So if you want to show up and just by numbers try to influence people by showing your support for something, I mean, that's exactly the First Amendment. And when you look at what he said during the speech, it was repeatedly things like, you know, the you fight like hell. Well, that's telling the legislators to fight. Very clearly the context that the prosecution overlooked. When you're talking about the people who won't do it, what do? Well, you primary them. He said this. We're looking for election reform. He said that. I played these clips for you before and we went through the speech after the fact. So what was the speech about? Was it about telling people to go do violence? Well, if so, it was a very bad example of that, because he never said that in the speech or in the tweets. He never said come armed. He never said go shoot. He never said bring spears, go kill people. I mean, you know, the kind of stuff that if you were really clearly intending violence, maybe you would have said, well, he's too smart for that. Okay, so again, you're saying he's too smart to do the thing that would actually prove your case. Do I think what he did was good? No. Do I think he could have foreseen these results? I mean, yeah, probably. Did anybody really foresee it? Well, they all say they did after the fact. But if so, then why did anybody act as if a riot was coming? Well, because nobody really believed that was going to happen. Because the pattern of evidence that a riot was intended or foreseeable or, you know, cause, it was not there until after the fact, looking back. And after the fact, looking back is not a prosecution, is not a legitimate way to prosecute. 437-1620, 437-1620. It's 550 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. So, you know, I'm always telling you about Christina Leavenworth and how effective she and her team are at selling homes. And I was just talking to her the other day and she was saying, Andrew, look, I actually feel like pretty much if we can come to an agreement about the right price, and you kind of have to if you're the real estate agent, the right price to sell a home at, she's like, I can get your home sold in 7 days, is what she thinks, which is pretty impressive when you really think about it, 7 days. I mean, it may not happen every single time, but that's kind of the idea. And she says, look, for example, we were at Marcus Point, you know, a house there, 3 offers in a day, ended up selling it way over the list price. Another home by the mall, 8 offers in 1 day. Now you think, I mean, it's just, you know, like, house sales are just dropping out of the sky. Well, not exactly. You still have to stage them properly. You still have to take the right photos. You still have to understand marketing, especially digital marketing. Not everybody does. She really does. You have to have a person who is courteous and capable and answers the phone. And, you know, I mean, all these things are necessary. But when you have all of that, and Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty have all that, they get homes sold fast for great price all the time. If you want to find out how she might be able to help you, 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 723-9158. Morning, 5:55 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Yes, I'm back. Thank you to Davis and Mike and Bobby for filling in for me while I was gone. And, of course, Mark Jacobs, he's just always there. He's just always there, except when he goes on vacation, which we don't allow, right, Mark? You're not allowed to take vacation?
Not very often.
Yeah, see? No. So it's fine. We don't have to worry about that. Yeah. What's going on in the newsroom this morning, Mark?
Dr. Anthony Fauci giving Americans hopeful news about the impact of the vaccines against the coronavirus variant from the UK.
The vaccine that we are now currently distributing, the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine, clearly work against this variant.
On ABC's This Week, Fauci added the best way to protect against any serious health risk is to make sure as many people get vaccinated as possible.
I thought you were going to say is to wear three masks.
Wear three masks, stay in your house, put yourself in a bubble, and, you know.
And this whole double masking thing, I mean, it makes sense. I know, but it's just kind of suddenly become.
If one mask is good, then
four masks are better.
Masks
that's
are
right.
Great.
That's right. Yeah. If you can still breathe through it, it's fine.
Winter weather causing a nightmare for travel across the country. Thousands of flights delayed or canceled because of a series of winter storms. Bulk of the cancellations and delays have been flights in and out of Dallas-Fort Worth.
I wouldn't go west this morning. I wouldn't go west this morning.
No. Yeah. Michael McDowell winning the Daytona 500 for the first time in his Cup Series career surged ahead on the final caution lap on Sunday after Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski both crashed.
Wow. I didn't watch it.
I didn't either.
Okay. There we go.
I've never been attracted by cars going around and around and around in a circle.
I don't have a problem with it. It's just not my thing. And no. This is probably going to make me look bad, but it's okay. I don't mind admitting things I don't know. I just don't understand all the NASCAR rules. I understand cars going around in a circle and winning a race. Mm-hmm. All of the team stuff and the scoring and all of that. Like, a person winning, I get that. But all of the other aspects of how it's scored and kept, I have no idea. I've never understood any of that. But that's
oh,
me.
Well.
That's fine.
Yeah, the end of a NASCAR
You're not
race
on
is
yet, Davis.
Kind of... Do what?
Is your mic on?
Yeah, my mic's on.
No, I can't hear you at all.
Mic is on. Mark, can you hear me?
What?
Can you hear him talking? Talk, Davis.
I'm talking.
Yes, I can hear him.
Okay.
He can hear you talk.
Neat. Fun tech stuff this morning.
Awesome stuff.
Go ahead,
No,
Davis.
The end of a basketball, or it's like a basketball game. The end of a NASCAR race is like a basketball game where they keep calling timeouts, and NASCAR, they just keep wrecking.
Yeah, no, that part, right. Exactly. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 5:57 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. I remember when I lost my in the interest of fairness, you know, I've told you before many times that I will always try to be fair to even, you know, President Biden, who I disagree with probably about almost everything politically. I told you before, I actually kind of admired his admonishment that if people were rude in the White House, he would get rid of them. He's done it. Deputy Press Secretary T.J. Ducklow is out after a reporter was trying to investigate a relationship he was having with somebody else inappropriately. And he was extraordinarily rude and mean to her. And he got caught. And the article came out. And he's gone. So, and he apologized. But, yeah, he left the White House. So, good. That's good. I like to see character honored in the White House.